jeni me SBS Albanian. Komuniteti shqiptar është një nga komunitetet më të vjetra në Australi. Shqiptarët ishin ndër të parët europian që tentuan të zbulojnë kontinentin e ri në fund të shekullit të 19, si dhe fillimet e shekullit të 20. Brezat që rodhen patën mes tyre dhe persona që i dhanë dhe vazhdojnë të japin kontributin e tyre të jetë të vlefshëm shtetit dhe shoqërisë australiane. I tillë është edhe personazhi që do të prezantojmë në vazhdim. Ai përket fushës juridike dhe më saktë sferës së gjyqësorit. Gjyqtari Rauf Sulio njihet nga të gjithë shqiptarët në Australi. Ai mban vendin e nderuar të gjyqtarit të gjykatës rajonale të Australisë Jugore e qëndron në këtë detyrë që në vitin 2006. Por cila është historia e tij dhe e familjes së tij? Babai Raufit ishte nga Lubonja e Korçës. Ai emigroi në Australi pas ardhjes në fuqi të regjimit komunist. Nëna e tij është australiane. Ja u larguar nga Shqipëria për shkak të regjimit komunist, siç tham, e kaloi një periudhë në Greqi. Më pas, mbriti në Australi, ku fillimisht tregoi se kishte shpirt për biznes. Pas martesës me nënën e Raufit dhe lindjes së dy djemve, familja u vendos në Shepperton, ku kishte lulëzuar një komunitet i vogël, por mjaft aktiv shqiptar. Nëna e Raufit fliste shqip. Për disa, ajo fliste shqip më mirë se shqiptarët. Le ta ndjekim historinë e tij.
Bjorna, welcome to SBS Radio, the Albanian program.
Thank you, Melinda. It's good to be here.
I would like to go and start from the start, I suppose, which is basically your family history. Now, you have Albanian heritage and your father was from Albania, I believe. Which
yes.
area?
He was from the Korça area, a village called Lubonja.
Mm-hmm.
His father and uncles had bought land in Lubonja after they'd worked in New York and in Istanbul during the 1920s, and then they were established in that region, and that's where my father was born and raised. My mother is a fifth-generation Australian who my father met in Western Australia shortly after he arrived here.
How did he come to be in Australia?
During the period following the Second World War, he was in a different political party than the one that came to power, and he was marked for execution, and so he escaped from Albania over Mount Gramoz into Greece, where he spent about a year in a camp, but also working in Greece, and then made his way to Italy, and there was a program to bring war refugees, in effect, to Australia and to other Western countries.
In which year did your father arrive in Australia?
He arrived in 1950 on the 20th of January, and on a ship that came into Fremantle.
Did he ever tell you about the way he escaped? You said he escaped through Mount Gramoz. Did he give you more information about that?
I know that he escaped at night, and it was winter, and he was with two other men. They were their clothes were not suitable for climbing at night, but there were soldiers stationed along a fairly high ridge on that mountain that they had to get through. And he was left with frostbitten toes as a result of that escape. And I remember he, when he got down into Greece, they hadn't eaten for a couple of days, and he found corn on a farm, and they ate corn, and the corn was a big part of our childhood, because my father would always roast corn on the fire in winter, and I think it related back to that time when the corn they found had effectively saved their lives. And I took that walk up Mount Grimoz, but at a much kinder time of the year, with two of my cousins. So many decades later, we met a very old shepherd on the mountain who'd remembered my father coming through. So again, there's these powerful connections that emerged out of that first trip.
And he settled in Western Australia.
He didn't settle very much at all in the early days, because he, like so many Albanians who'd been forced to escape from Albania, thought that the border would open again and they'd be able to return to be with their families. But of course, it never happened.
And what did he used to talk about his early days in Australia?
He did. He was quite entrepreneurial. He very early on bought a run-down hostel, which he renovated, and that was used to house new arrivals in Western Australia. He had no money when he arrived and had to borrow for the purchase of that old building. And when his bank manager said that he needed a deposit, he persuaded the bank manager to personally lend him the deposit as well. So,
and then he met your mother.
He met my mother when he went to Meckering in Western Australia, where he and another Albanian friend were building a stone hall for the local church, because he, I'm not sure where he picked up that skill, but he was able to build with stone. And incidentally, that was the only building that survived the Meckering earthquake without any damage.
Was he proud of that?
He was. Well, quietly proud of it. He met my mother through that connection, because her family were one of the families that were attending that church at the time, and the family invited him to, I think initially just to join them for dinner, and then my mother at that stage was quite young, and my father went away travelling and working, and then some years later came back and asked her to marry him.
What happened then?
As I said, my mother was quite young at the time. My father worked in a lot of different jobs, and after he'd been in Meckering, he set out for Darwin, and I remember him telling the story of driving at that time in what were quite poor conditions, very undeveloped roads, and he said that he would go to sleep with his shoes pointed in the direction that he had to go the next morning, so that he knew where he was going. But he made his way to Darwin, and along the way he worked in a mine at Tennant Creek. He helped run a gambling operation in Darwin, which was a card place where mostly people in Darwin of European heritage would gather and drink coffee and play cards. He would that was at this time when, as I said, he expected the borders of Albania to open, and he wasn't really paying much attention to the future. He was living in the moment, to use a modern expression. And so he would fly to Mount Isa, for example, to attend the races there, or then fly back to Darwin and resume his work. It was probably 4 or 5 years later that he returned to Western Australia and married my mother, and then came the move to Whyalla that I've spoken about.
Did he manage to communicate with his relatives in Albania during this time?
It was very limited. My memory is that the first letters that he received were in about the mid-60s, so perhaps 18 years after he'd left Albania, and it was very difficult. So there was no communication for a long time, and he had no word, which was very painful for him. And then the letters were all very repetitive and careful, which those who had relatives in Albania and communicated with them would understand, because letters were always read and opened by the authorities. So there was really, it was almost proof of life letters, which said, yes, we're all okay and things are going well. And then occasionally there would be tragic news of someone's passing, but it was a process where he did have some correspondence. And in fact, my cousin, who I said had driven us around Albania on the first visit, was one that maintained the link between my father and his family in Albania quite strongly, and so he holds a special place in my heart for that, amongst other things.
Then you were born, where were you born?
I was born in Whyalla, mm-hmm. in South Australia. My father moved there shortly after he married, and my immediately younger brother and I were born in Whyalla. My father initially worked for BHP, as did most migrants who travelled to Whyalla, but it didn't suit him to be employed, and he ended up buying some shops in the main street in Whyalla and operated some businesses there.
And then, you grew up in that part of the country?
Yes. No, I was there only until I was five, but there was no real Albanian community in Whyalla. Mm-hmm. And so my father made the decision to move to Shepparton when I was five, because there was an established Albanian community. There was a Jami, Albanian events were on, and Flamura was celebrated, and so that was the reason that we moved.
And what was it like growing up in Shepparton with Albanians?
Well, it was a fantastic childhood. We were on a farm for some years, mm-hmm. and there was a sense of community. There was a very good structured community organisation there. Albanians met often, they visited each other's houses often, and there were, of course, community events to mark special days, or even just to get the community together. So it was a very positive experience as a young boy.
I'm told your mother spoke Albanian as well.
She did. It's a reflection both of her passion and enthusiasm for the culture, and I suppose my father's force of personality, but between them, what emerged was that my mother learned to speak fluent Albanian, and when I travelled with her to Albania to meet my father's relatives for the first time in 1992, people couldn't believe that she was not Albanian, and it was sometimes said that she was more Albanian than the Albanians.
Rauf thot se i ati ishte kërkues dhe kërkonte që fëmijët e tij të arsimoshin. Dega juridiku mund të ketë qenë produkti dëshirës së tij, por edhe influencës së tatit. Në fillim Rauf ishte avokat e më pas kaloi në pozitën e gjyqtarit. Ai ruan fort lidhjet me Shqipërinë dhe thot se nga historia e saj admiron vëllezrit Frashëri.
Did your father ever end up going back to Albania?
No, he waited for Enver Hoxha to die, but when that happened and the borders still didn't open, I think it was too much for him.
You grew up, how do you study law from Shepparton? Not agriculture?
I think, as with many first-generation migrants who arrive in this country, my father was very keen on the idea that his children would have an education, And we see amongst the community so many young Albanians who have gone to university and obtained qualifications and succeed in the professions. And I think I was part of that process. I always thought that it was my decision to study law and become a lawyer, but I suspect that somehow it was my father's influence.
And where did you study?
I studied in Adelaide. My mother had a sister living there, and although I was accepted into a couple of different universities, my father was keen on me going somewhere where we had a relative living, and he had no relatives in Australia, having come out in the way that I've said. And so that was the reason I ended up studying
the family
in Adelaide.
Connection and support, I suppose, which is very, very important for us Albanians in general as a community, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely right.
You ended up living in Adelaide?
I did. I started work as a lawyer shortly after I graduated. I'd spent a couple of years doing other things. I'd worked in Shepparton for a year and travelled to America at the end of that time before I started studying law. But once I'd completed law, I took up work as a lawyer and then became a barrister before being appointed to my current job.
Was there any challenges along the way, having an immigrant background, having a different name from, you know, the John Smiths and, you know, the Mr. Whites?
I suppose not that I experienced so much from university days onwards. There was a little bit of a challenge at school, even though there was a strong Albanian community in Shepparton. There was still migrants were somewhat unusual, I suppose, in some ways, and with different cultural practices and different food, and those things were questioned by fellow students from time to time, but never to the point where I felt discriminated against. Once I was in practice, no, the only real issue was having to spell your name every time you telephone someone.
And yours is not the most difficult Albanian name either. let's talk a little bit about the life of a migrant. How much has that shaped you?
I think for all children of migrants, to some extent, you feel caught between the dominant culture and your parents' culture, and as we know, the first generation migrants imagine that their country of origin has stayed the same as it was when they left. So Albanian culture in Australia is I think stronger than Albanian culture in Albania, because of course Albanian culture in Albania is modernized and in a way that the first generation migrants never allowed their culture to modernise. So that there's always a tension, I think, for children of migrants. But of course, in other ways, it was such a great positive because it emphasised the strength of family, the strength of community, the importance of maintaining that understanding of where you came from, and undoubtedly our history and our cultural influences shape us for the rest of our lives.
Do you have a passion or a favourite Albanian hero or figure?
Well, everyone has to mention Skender Bey if you ask that question, of course, but I also admire the Frasheries for the emphasis on education in the early years and my father, as I say, grew up in Lobonia, which is near Korçë, which is sort of the seat of learning in Albania, and or so we like to think.
What is your Albanian like?
I would have to say it's somewhere between restaurant and conversational Albanian.
So when you go to Albania, you manage okay?
I can get around okay, but higher level discussions, I need to have an interpreter.
Of course.
Assist.
Aje kujton me trishtim vizitën e parë në Shqipëri, vizit që kishte shpresuar ta bënte me tatin. Për të ishte moment prekës kur vizitoj fshatin e tatit e u takua me antarët e familjes së tij për herë të parë në jetë.
Tell me about your first visit to Albania. What was that like?
That was a very moving time for me. As I say, my father had died by then. I travelled with my youngest brother, Dini, and my mother. Albania had just come out of the year of upheaval that followed the first election, which wasn't accepted as a legitimate election. Much of the infrastructure had been destroyed. Landing at the airport, looked down to see that the runway was made of large concrete blocks with animals being fed on the grass that grew up between the blocks. And as the plane arrived, the farmers who were looking after individual animals took the animals off to the side so the plane could land, and then came back on. And petrol was almost unobtainable. Tires were almost unobtainable. People were standing around looking almost stunned, because there wasn't much direction, and they'd of course come out of this period of such close suspicious
darkness,
restraint, that it was amazing. But meeting family, of course, was the warmest experience I've ever had. Meeting my father's brothers, who looked like my father, it was an amazing experience. My first cousin had somehow, in anticipation of the visit, put away enough money to buy an old car, and we travelled around the entire country visiting every relative that we could find, because during the communist era, relatives were not allowed to visit each other, or our relatives were not allowed to visit each other.
Of course.
So it was it's a trip that's stayed with me very vividly ever since.
You visited Albania afterwards, of course, many other times.
Yes. I went back a year later and spent a month there. I'd met a young lawyer, Preprim Carlo, who was then working in the government, and we got on quite well. And he was a year later working in the National Insurance Department, which was a government authority, and working on new legislation, new national insurance legislation. So I went back for a month and worked on the that legislation a long time ago now. But and then I've been back many times, particularly more recently.
How do you find it every time you go?
The pace of change in Albania, particularly in Tirana, is phenomenal. I suppose because Albania was coming off quite a low economic base, the development of infrastructure, the buildings, the road network, every visit produces a remarkable level of change. Even if I only spend a year or even 6 months between visits, you can see the change each time. Also been a very significant migration from the villages into the towns, and from the towns into Tirana. So Tirana's grown at a pace that, as with many capital cities, it wasn't prepared for, and the infrastructure wasn't there. It's working well.
Raufin tjet krenar për Shqiprin dhe ndryshimet e saj. A I e promovon ato dhe tek miqt dhe tek shokët e ti.
In fact, I took one of my colleagues over in August. He and his wife came and spent some days in Tirana, and then touring around with me in the south of Albania, and they thought it was a fantastic trip, and the best experience of the 6 weeks they spent travelling through Europe.
Where did you take them?
We went down to Vlora, to Saranda, to Butrint, and to Gjirokastër, and I think as Albanians we probably underestimate how appealing and attractive these places are to international visitors. It was summer and it was very busy, but the tourists who were there were from certainly all over Europe, from America, from the United Kingdom, from Germany and other close countries. Saranda had, you know, an incredible number of Italian tourists, of course, which is close by. An old friend of mine from Shepherd and Shirley Seat, who I ran into in Kortcher by accident after having not seen her for decades, is now taking small groups of tourists from Australia on a tour through the country, and the feedback has been fantastic. So one thing I would like to say is to encourage Albanians to choose, Albanians in Australia, to choose Albania as a tourist destination as well as a visit back to either visit family or for cultural reasons.
Do you have a favourite Albanian city?
That's a dangerous question. The first time I went to Albania, I had my uncles who lived in Lubonia, which is across a large valley from a village where two of my aunties lived called Staria. And when I was in Staria, I was asked the question, which is the better village, Staria or Lubonia? And it, of course, it's a politically fraught question. So I had to think for a while, and then I said that the best village was Staria, because from Staria you could see Lubonia, whereas from Lubonia you could only see Staria. So that seemed to satisfy both sides of the family. Tirana is my favourite city in Albania, but for a combination of reasons. Gjirokastra is a beautiful city in the mountains. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, as you will know. It's spectacular historically. The seaside towns are very attractive and not overly developed. So, there's still that sort of raw, off-the-track attraction.
If we go back to you, you were the chair of the Australian Multicultural Council for 3 years, chairperson of the Australian Migrant Resource Centre in South Australia, member of the National Judicial Council on Cultural Diversity. You were a member of the National Access and Equity Inquiry Panel, National Anti-Racism Partnership Strategy, ANZAC Centenary Advisory Council, and the Aged Care Reform Council. A lot of memberships there. And I can see a little bit of a common thread: diversity, multiculturalism, immigrants. Is that a passion of yours?
It is, and it started with, of course, my background and my parents' influence on me in terms of trying to, I suppose, contribute to the community. And then in turn, I became involved in delegations to Canberra with the Albanian community, with my old friend Cesar Yakupi and others, to speak often with the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the day about issues in Albania or in Kosovo. And as a result of that, following the war in Kosovo, when the Australian government brought Kosovar refugees to Australia, many of us in different capital cities became involved in providing assistance to the refugees, advocating for the refugees, and speaking on various issues and liaising with the organisations that were providing hands-on assistance. And through that, I became involved in the Australian Migrant Resource Centre, headquartered in Adelaide, and later became the chair of that organisation. And then one thing leads to another, and I became involved in the Australian Multicultural Council initially through that connection, and then was appointed chair of that organisation. And through that, and I think because of recognition of the importance of having diverse voices on some of these advisory councils, national councils, there were appointments to other councils that developed out of that.
Mbajtës i shumë titujve dhe antarësive në bordet e njësër organizata shumë kulturore që kanë për qëllim forcimin e kulturave të ndryshme në Australi, Rauf ka luajtur edhe një rol të rëndësishëm në njohjen e qeverisë australiane me çështjet shqiptare në Kosovë dhe Shqipëri. Ai punoi edhe në drejtim të ndihmave për refugjatët e Kosovës në vitin 1999. Më pas Raufi u emërua edhe si konsul i përgjithshëm i nderit për Republikën e Shqipërisë dhe e kryen këtë detyrë me dëshirë. Ja se si shprehet.
You now are honorary consul general for Albania and Kosovo. How did that come about?
The Albanian appointment arose after an Albanian politician visited Australia and met with various people around the place, and after a meeting we had and a dinner which a friend of mine in Adelaide, who later became the Attorney General of South Australia, was also in attendance, and subsequently told me that the most dangerous word in any language that he'd ever heard is gazur. I was approached to see whether I'd be prepared to take on that role. On a side issue, I've always tried to suggest to the Albanian government that there should be more honorary consular appointments in Australia, and particularly in the bigger community centres, and Melbourne's obviously a place where there, I think, needs to be a separate appointment of an honorary consul.
What does the role involve?
It's a mix of things. Tourist advice is one. But no, the role is essentially trying to assist Albanian citizens in Australia who have needs in relation to travel or visa issues or the like, to liaise with the Australian authorities on behalf of the community where I can, to provide advice to Australians who are intending to travel to Albania, and that's becoming an increasing part of the role. It's not too demanding, and of course it's a way of promoting the interests of Albania in a fairly undemanding way. The Albanian community in Australia is, as you know, well established and is represented by a lot of different community organisations, whether they're centred around Jami or football activities or religious activities. So in terms of the Australian-based community, I will act as a spokesman for various things where some sort of authorised representative is required to say something or to confirm something on behalf of the community, or there's an issue that is raised by government, and they include things ranging from, as I say, organising for the Australian government to issue travel documents to an Albanian who needs to return to Albania but has no travel documents. Deportation issues arise from time to time. So they're the sort of the negative side of things that need to be attended to, and the advocacy and representation items are the positive side.
Now, I did a little bit of research, and somewhere I read that you were a kickboxing referee.
I trained in martial arts, and although I've seen a reference to a referee, in fact it was a judge of martial arts and on an appeal body for martial mm-hmm. arts. In fact, I'm going to the UFC tomorrow, not in an official capacity.
But you were a member of the International, or you are a member of the International Court of Arbitration for Sport.
Yes, that's right.
As well as a president of the Football Federation for South Australia.
Yes, I've now constitutionally retired from the Football Federation of South Australia position after a total of about 10 years mm-hmm. on that body. As any of those involved in the administration of football know, it's quite a demanding role, but a very rewarding one, and I very much enjoyed that. In 1975, my father had contact with his friends from the war years and from camp and so on, who were living in Detroit, and we went to visit there. We spent just under 2 months travelling around to different houses of the large Albanian community there. That was another turning point in my life where I saw role models in the Albanian community who had succeeded in business, and two of my father's friends from those days were Niazi Bardha and Ekrem Bardha. And in fact, Ekrem had established a successful group of McDonald's restaurants at that time. And in 1975, McDonald's was in its infancy in Australia, and Ekrem provided an introduction to the manager of McDonald's in Australia at the time, a guy called Peter Ritchie, which we discussed on the plane on the way back. And in one of those turning points where you don't take an opportunity.
Detyra e gjykatësit nuk është e lehtë. Rauf thot se ajo shpesh është edhe vështirë, por ka vlera. Për të ka rëndësi edhe fakti që kjo detyrë për të frymëzon edhe të rinjtë e tjerë shqiptar, të cilët dëshirojnë të marrin rrugën e drejtësisë, e pse jo, të bëhen edhe gjykatës një ditë.
I said that I wanted to go on with an education and not be in the hamburger business, but obviously that showed a complete lack of foresight. So my career took quite a different path.
And you became a judge.
Well, I did, okay. Although that was, of course, as with all judges, a long way into a legal career before that happened.
How did that happen?
As I mentioned, after working as a lawyer, as a solicitor for a few years, I became a barrister and went to the Independent Bar, where I was practicing for another 18 years. And one day I got a call from the then Attorney General, not the one I've referred to earlier, but the Attorney General of the day, who had quite a good sense of humour, who asked me whether I'd be prepared to give up duty in the cause of King Zog and take up duty in the cause of Queen Elizabeth. So, and so that was the system, that you were approached by the government of the day, and an offer was made, and after some thought, I accepted it.
And what does a day in the life of a judge look like?
I think one thing you can say is that no day in the life of a judge is like any other day, because unusual things happen every day. It's obviously a responsible position. That is, the work you do weighs heavily on you, and sometimes keeps you awake at night. I think judges try to do the right thing. Being a barrister is easy, you're just trying to win, but trying to do the right thing is a different task altogether.
And you've been doing this job for now 16 years, is that right?
I've been a judge for 13 years.
13 years.
Yeah.
With the South Australia District Court?
Yes.
And is it, you said that it is of course difficult, but it has its rewards, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you... I think the community appreciates the work that judges do. I think we have a very good system of justice in Australia. I think it's a very fair system. And it's a great honour to be offered the position and to work in that role. So it certainly has its rewards, and I don't regret the decision at all. I'm pleased to see that there are now quite a few young Albanians graduating from law and practising law, and I have to acknowledge that one of the inspirations in my early education was the fact that there was an Albanian lawyer, Hasset Sali, And so I think just knowing that there are members of your community who take up these professions and positions gives encouragement to others that are following. And I acknowledge Hassett's role in encouraging me to pursue my career. And I met with him in Melbourne on a couple of occasions when I was studying, and I hope that I've been able to encourage some others along the way as well.
Well, would you say it's an inspiring lawyer, a young lawyer?
Well, I'd warn them that it's hard work, that and I'd encourage them to be proud of their heritage and take the positives out of the Albanian cultural heritage and apply it to their work. And again, I pay tribute to my father for his role in my career. My father, unfortunately, because of political circumstances, didn't have the benefit of an education. But I remember when I would take my university legal problems home and discuss them with him, he would always come up with the right answer, even without knowing what the legal principles that had to apply were. And so I think that sense of justice is a really important part of work as a lawyer. It can pay well, and that's a reward, of course, and we don't step away from that. People go into the law because it's a well-paid profession, but it's also an honourable profession and one which enables people to do good in the community. The idea of helping others who are not able to help themselves is very much a reward as well.
Your Honour, it's been a pleasure having you in our studio today, and we thank you for your time. We hope to have you here again.
Thank you, Melinda. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you this afternoon.
Thank you.
Дани да коментони SBS Albanian на Facebook.